This is For Advisors by Advisors. I'm your host, Evan J. Mayer. And today we have a very special guest in Lindsay Bryant Lewis. How are you?
I am doing so well, and I am extremely excited to be here and to have this conversation with you.
Well, I'm excited about it too. And you know, like I said to you earlier, we had two people that recommended you, and I looked at some of the things you've done in the past and was very excited. Lindsay is the director and chair of the American College Center for Women in Financial Services. She is less than 5 years in the business, though I looked through and it looked like you had a little bit more time in there. So, and she is the winner of the 2022 Women in Wealth Management Rising Stars Award. And last year in 2021, she was in the Investment News 40 Under 40 recipients. So congratulations to you on that. Amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for making it the Lindsay Show this today.
Absolutely. So tell the audience what you do. You've been in this role now for, it looks like, a couple years. What does the role entail? What is the day-to-day and what you're doing? What's the mission statement behind it and the passion behind it?
Absolutely. So I like to always start this conversation as I'm a practitioner by trade that switched over to academia and to advocacy work. So I say I do what advisors want to do that are back burner items. Those are my top of mind. So I am working on networking, building community and connection, and I really help women navigate their career and educational journeys through financial services. So at the American College of Financial Services, we have 9 designation programs plus master's degree programs. So sometimes you get into this industry and you're like, what's my niche? How could I better my clients? How can I move this moving forward? Which exam should I take first? Which designation should I pursue? So I really help women through my, what I consider my grassroots phone calls, where we'll have a Zoom call, we'll have a discussion, we'll navigate which direction they want to go moving forward. But I do have that practitioner hat, right? So I'm a certified financial planner professional and a chartered financial consultant. And I, you know, have that background. So I have the same lived experience as these individuals that are going through these career pathing journeys. The mission of the college is applied financial knowledge for financial professionals. So we are dipping our toes into the consumer space, but historically we've helped a lot of financial professionals, you know, fine-tune their practice, really get the education and aptitude they need to make sure that they're serving their clients the absolute best.
So obviously you're kind of taking them from step one, the SEI, which is something that I never had to take, but getting them going on that progression on the licenses. You starting with certifications first, or are you starting with more on the educational footprint, or is it more pass the test, then let's get the true education of what we do done?
Yeah. So at the college, we don't deal with the series exam side, the FINRA side, SEC side. So typically individuals are coming to me post taking those exams, but I open my calendar for aspiring financial professionals. And so for those conversations, that's when we're doing kind of that fine tuning. Most of the time when advisors are coming to the college, they are looking to further their educational knowledge for their clients. So we have like a designation specifically for retirement income. So individuals that are working with, you know, constituents, clients that are a little bit more seasoned, tenure, we're going to have a specific niche that helps them make sure that they're making the best decisions for their clients.
And why choose the American College Center for Women instead of, you know, some of the other colleges that are offering the same designations? Is it focused solely on women, and how is that education change different, I guess?
Yeah. So the college as a whole, we're an accredited college. The Center for Women, you can kind of think of them as like traditional schools, you could say. So we have a plethora of different centers. So we have a Center for Economic Empowerment and Equality, one for retirement income, one for financial well-being. So you can, with the centers, you can find like what you're passionate about and what resonates with you, and then you can have a meaningful impact. So the content and curriculum that is coming out of the center is not necessarily tied to a designation. We really help with the CE component continuing on. So if you need those CE hours for the college, as well as for CFP CE, that's where we're helping out. We build practice management material. So we're not necessarily tied specifically to a designation, but the reason why it's important or why I love partnering with the American College is that we are truly mission driven, and we are really taking, you know, spearheading some of these really large issues that are happening within financial services and tackling them head on.
I've been in this business now 20 years, and I've seen a tremendous change. I'm seeing women come in droves, and I'm seeing actually a lot of older women that were not in finance become financial advisors now. And I was talking about this on a prior podcast, and I'm interested in the subject because to me, I think I never looked at it that way. We don't look at it and go, oh, there's no women in here. We just kind of looked at it as what it was. And I was in a meeting in Austin, and there were 70 advisors and 20 were women. And I never was in a room where it was that many. I didn't necessarily go, well, this is interesting, but we have seen such a progression happen, and these advocacy groups are now hopping up, and that's an interesting thing. And now all firms, and again, what I'm hoping that these programs are doing is they're actually advancing women in financial planning and financial services, and not just checking a mark that we have that here and it's all good. Follow me?
I'm following you.
the steps that have been made are phenomenal, but they're nowhere near where you want to go.
Yeah, so there has been a lot of advancement over the last couple of decades. But if you dive into the statistics, when you look at, let's say, CFP professionals, the percentage of women has really not increased the last two decades. So they're still hovering around 23-25%. When you look at even our designations.
Financial advisors to CFPs?
That's CFP professionals. So of the like 80, 90,000 CFP professionals, only 25% are women.
Are women. Okay.
Right. When you look at larger financial professionals, it gets a little bit tricky from like a reporting aspect, because what classifies as an advisor at some places versus other places, but you could still say we're anywhere between like 15 to 30%. You do see a lot of these companies having this as part of their DE&I initiatives, which is absolutely important. But to your point, like, we don't want lip service. We want people there that are qualified, love the work that they're doing, are really educated, can really help their clients. When you see that transition, you see a lot of these career changers moving over to financial services. And usually the catalyst for that is some sort of financial event that happens in their life, whether it is a death of a parent or a child or a divorce or, you know, some terrible investment product gets sold to them. You have some sort of catalyst that's moving them over. So when we look at this, it's just the optics and the narrative, and like for women, it goes like super far back, because girls' confidence in math peaks at age 9. Just like digest that for a second. So we have like third and fourth graders. That's the most confident girls are in their math abilities.
Well, my 12-year-old's number one in her class, so I'm excited about that.
Yes, let's change that statistic. It is a terrible one. So when you have like
it's an interesting
culture,
statistic too. It's
right.
Yeah.
Right. When you have all these pop culture messaging, as well as, you know, systemic beliefs. And when you go to, let's say, like majority of elementary schools might have female faculty members. And if they go up to the board and they're struggling with math, there's like a subliminal message that's happening in like young girls' minds. And so it really is like pushing them against kind of these STEM careers. So that's where I like want to plant a lot of seeds moving forward is, you know, how can we change the perception of at younger ages? However, like the industry at large has like struggle with recruiting, retention, all of those things. So
you bring up a good point, and that is, you know, financial services need to be taught in grade school. It needs to be taught in. We had Matt Gardner on who did the Four Money Bears, a phenomenal book, and getting into high school specifically, where kids can actually associate the money in their pockets with how to allocate properly. Talk a little bit about the inclusion networks are now really going into other lanes. It's not just women. It's you'll have LGBTQ, you'll have veterans, you'll have like different groups and different segments. You're specifically focused on women. Do you find that That's obviously the biggest hurdle, I think, in overcoming. I mean, once you start getting too secular in these lanes, it starts to, in my opinion, like the difference between somebody knowing if I'm a veteran or not knowing if I'm a veteran, I don't know how that helps. But I guess my question is, do you feel that takes away from what you're trying to achieve?
Great question. One thing I would say is I think it's supplemental. So building awareness across the board brings to light like a lot of these issues, which women intersect on every single one of those groups, right? So we have female veterans, we have spouses of military members, we have, you know, individuals in the queer community or the LGBTQ plus community. We have people of color that are coming into these. So there's a lot of intersectionality. We consider it like coopetition, right? If they're building it, they're sounding. What we find is with these different organizations is that they're usually built up because someone is wickedly passionate around a specific topic. So I don't have the same lived experience as you, and I wouldn't have the same lived experience as my brother, who's a military member. So I think it's great as long as we're like amplifying voices. However, what I would love if I could wave my magic wand is that there would be some, I don't know, combining of efforts on certain initiatives, right? Whether it's, hey, we're all going to lobby for financial education in high school. So I came from a state that it was required for a semester long class in high school. And it really was the catalyst that changed my mind. I was all like medical field. That's what I wanted to do. I was just an athlete. So like natural fit. And then I went through this financial literacy class and I was like, oh, I could be a mom and have a good career and make a good living. So I think, all these different groups and organizations, I'm a champion for all of you. You know, like if you're going to spend the time, you're going to amplify your voices, but let's just see if we can work together to make our voices louder.
Actually, now that you said that and you kind of put that together, it makes sense to me. So it's part of the reason I'm doing this podcast is education. I have interviewed a few female advisors on here that when I said to them, what are their thoughts regarding these groups? Do you guys ladies find a benefit in these groups, or are you both, two of the ladies that I've interviewed so far, and I have a few more that are coming on the show, and I asked them that question and they both came back to me with basically the same answer, that they don't want that to be a crutch. They don't want to be known as one of the best female financial advisors. They want to be known as one of the best financial advisors. And one of them had said that, and the other one had said they believe in a meritocracy where if you did something, then you should get the credit for it. But then part of me, and again, I don't have a group per se, but if I did, would being in that group benefit me on a knowledge standpoint alone? And that's where I think the biggest bang is for you, is not necessarily in getting clients to change their mind from working with a female advisor to not, but can your education together and what you've learned and the ability to communicate with clients, is that a huge benefit by being in those groups? What's your response to the woman that mentioned that say they don't want it to be a crutch? They don't want to be known as the best female financial advisor. They just want to be known as the best financial advisor.
Yeah, I think it goes twofold there. So I would also agree with that, right? If I have done the skills and I have the aptitude and I deliver great financial advice to my clients, I want to be considered as the best financial advisor, not just the best female financial advisor. So Sally Krawcheck of LFS actually just recently wrote an article about that, where she's like, I have a love-hate relationship with these like top female 100 lists because I am a boss, not a girl boss, something like that.
Yeah.
But when you look at these different organizations, really what the impact they can have is that you can amplify voices. So we want voices of males, et cetera, because we want to make sure that women are there to deliver financial advice, right? So if we're thinking about, if I'm a fiduciary and I want to offer the best advice for my client, I would always say this as an advisor. I'd say, you know what, client A, client B, you don't have to work with me. What you want to work with is someone that you can trust, that is a fiduciary, has your best interest at heart, and someone that you like. But for this huge transition of wealth, we have $70 trillion that will be transitioning hands over the next couple of decades from baby boomers to different types of clients, whether it's women, people of color, et cetera. what they want an advisor is probably different than what my dad wants an advisor. And perhaps my advisor is a man of color or something else, but I'm looking for that, you know, experience and that resonation. So what I'm trying to say here is that these groups, I don't look at them as a crutch. I look at them as a way to amplify voices to a louder volume. So, you know, gender equity, pay equity, et cetera, like those stories have been told for decades, but now we're finally getting some traction. And I don't look at it as a crutch. I look at it as an opportunity and a platform to educate others around these issues. And
maybe a good way of saying it would be, it's not for the individual advisor that's already successful. It's for the females that could be entering the space that might need the support and the push and the drive and the teamwork involved in these groups that could really grow the field for female financial advisors to grow the numbers in the field. It's not necessarily for the top female advisor that's already crushing it.
I would actually devil's advocate there, because that top successful advisor, how did they do what they did? How do you create that for other marginalized groups? And how could you scale that? And I guess it goes back to that person's like personal belief system of like passing along learning opportunities and advocacy work. But that top professional, whether it's man, woman, non-binary folk, they have something and they've learned something that's made their clients happy. And I think passing that along is super important. So it's important for those people, but if you don't have like a mentor-mentee relationship, if you don't have like the building blocks necessary, like how are you supposed to, I don't know what I don't know. If I go into this industry, like initially, if I work at a company, do I own my book of business? Do I not own my book of business? Do I have an asset when I go to retire? Do I not? Does the, like, how many assets under management, what type of billing cycle, what type of compensation, how are you having these conversations? What's your sales pipeline look like? Like, a successful advisor is going to have all of these iterations and things that they've gone through.
Yeah. The only pushback I'd give you on this is that I can tell you how every financial advisor got successful. They worked their butts off. Most, and some, and I had said this to, I had Chris Jeppesen on, who's basically a coach, I would say, one of my questions was, are you born with the ability to build relationships with people? Is that a God-given thing, or is there parts that we have to learn? And I would say, the top female financial advisors and the top male financial advisors, black, white, brown, doesn't matter. They went and they worked probably significantly hard. And I'm not talking about the ones that inherited it from mom and dad, but the people that came into this business without anything, weren't handed anything most of the time. They weren't handed a book of business to run. They built their book of business. They learned, they educated, they became students of the game. If these groups push the females, the people that are marginalized, as you said earlier, and pushes them to get above those humps quicker, then I'm all for it, right? I'm all about it. And I guess what you were trying to say is that we need those top female financial advisors part of the group so that they can help push those marginalized groups over the hump. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I would say that. And I think oftentimes you'll find it where a woman might have a lived experience of working their butt off during the 80s. And they're like, I had to do it the hard way. So like, Lindsay, you need to learn how to do it the hard way. Which if that's their, like how they feel and how they want to express, okay. However, when you look at these different groups and you look at the statistics, right? Revenue increases like 18% by diverse teams. You have greater different thought process. Like you could increase your bottom line as an advisor exponentially by adopting diverse thought across the board. So when I'm saying, when we have these like top successful people, even if you expedite one of their learning fails, one of their learning objectives, like something that took them 9 months, we make it 4 months for this other person. Like that's where you have the benefit of society.
That makes sense. No, and I agree. And I think you can't have one without the other. I think having both gets you from point two to point five quicker. I think that That makes a lot of sense. And I think the concept of them makes a lot of sense for, because now they exist too. And the question is, would those female advisors that are crushing it today, that have been in the business for a long time, if they had these inclusion groups 15 years ago, would they even been bigger, right? Would they have been farther along in the process? And that resonates, that makes a lot of sense.
Right. So those roadblocks, those hiccups, and it's not even necessarily just having like a female mentor. So oftentimes women will get mentored outside of their organization. And typically, you know, you might have the same gender mentor, but often you don't. And having a male ally advocating for you or helping you in different ways, especially if you can find someone within your firm, that's where it's difficult. But if I'm like, if you take my first firm, I was the only female financial professional. So it's like, I'm going to have to get mentorship if I want from like a woman outside of my organization. So I think it's really thinking about, hey, how is this going to set up people for success?
Yeah. And I'm affiliated with an organization that has a great person running those programs. They're expanding them and they're really giving the opportunities. I do want to emphasize that nothing will replace hard work and busting your butt. And by the way,
but I'm like, but if you're next, like if we take it someone else that comes from a slightly more affluent community, right? Like your natural network, you have much more possibilities. So if I made 100 phone calls and you made 100 phone calls, like you might be able to convert 8 and I can only convert 4 just by my natural network. Yep. So when you take like, hey, let's even like look beyond or different types of marketing, or, hey, here's some of my leads. Here's my D-list clients. If I'm like tiering, why don't you service them? See how that works. Like rethinking that, because like natural networks, like if like some people from like certain communities, like they don't know people with wealth.
Yeah.
So it is totally like you can work your butt off. You can make as many phone calls or whatever the equation was. It's not going to have the same result.
No. 100% location. There's a bunch of factors playing. I'm in South Florida in Boca. I was working in other areas prior, and I could tell you no matter how hard I worked in those areas, I was not going to bring in the same clientele that I'm able to bring here. I do fully agree with that. It was awesome having you on. Last question for you. You're driving home, you're listening to this podcast and you're like, I really wanted to make one point and I didn't have the opportunity to. What would be that point?
Yeah, I think it is really finding a group or community that you connect with and investing the time. Like really, you're going to get what you put out of, like what you put in, you're going to get out. And when you look at this opportunity for this industry at large, right, you have $70 trillion transitioning. You have 10,000 advisors retiring annually. You have an industry that cannot meet demand with quality talent. There's so much opportunity within this industry. However, like we are not attracting the people. So having those conversations, going to your alma mater, we have a presentation that anyone can give at your alma mater or wherever, an organization, a church, a group, wherever, that teaches about financial services. What if we really want the longevity of this industry, as well as, you know, amplifying those people that are doing it right, right? Those advisors that are really taking care of their clients, we have to like build the next generation. There's a huge opportunity within financial services. You just have to take the right steps. So on our website, thewomencenter.americancollege.edu, you're going to find the Women Working in Wealth channels. And under there, you're going to find so many resources. We have a workbook, so a guide. Hey, I don't know how to be an ally. I don't know how to be a mentor. I don't know what it means to be a champion. We did a lot of research. Everybody had different answers. So guess what? We put it together for you, right? You could find the workbook. You can find the presentation. Just find a way to engage so that you can amplify the voices that can really enhance and improve and build diversity and ultimately increase your bottom line.
Fantastic. Lindsay, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they reach you?
Yes. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Lindsay Bryant Lewis. You can also find me on social channels at Lynn's the Financial Feminist. And I run the Women Working in Wealth social channels, and you can find that on all social media platforms.
Fantastic. Lindsay, thank you. Thanks for coming on. Truly appreciate it. For advisors out there, hopefully you enjoyed this. Again, reach out to Lindsay. If you want to get a hold of Lindsay, you can also contact me. And I look forward to seeing you on the next show.